Well, I think we can start. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you very much for coming for this very special press conference with Dr. Tedros, our Director General, and Dr. Ian Clark, our Senior Emergency Officer. I would also like to welcome everyone who is watching us online on our Twitter account at WHO. We also would like to remind you that we will have a transcript from this press briefing, as well as audio file available very shortly after we finish. As Dr. Tedros and Dr. Clark have some commitments back at WHO building, we would really like to keep this press conference on Ebola topic only, and all the other topics that you may want to ask about, please get in touch with us and we will help you with that. So, I will give a floor immediately to Dr. Tedros for his opening remarks on the situation regarding Ebola outbreak in the DR Congo. Dr. Tedros.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Tariq. And thank you for joining us. Maybe I will start by adding to what he said. Today, I would really appreciate it if we can focus on Ebola, because we have actually a new, we will start a new tradition. That will help you to address all questions you have. In about a month or so, even less, we will bring a good number of our new leadership team to do the press conference as a group, maybe 5 to 7 of our senior management, and address all the questions you have. So we will have a separate one within 1 month, could be in 2 weeks or 1 month, and that will address any of the issues you will have, including the transformation that we have started. So that's why we want to have this on Ebola. But at the same time, I have some other engagements, so I need to rush out as soon as we finish Ebola. And I hope you will agree with me, especially on the new mechanism we will start that will give you a regular press conference representing the senior leadership, at least 5 to 7 of them coming together, covering different areas. And I will proceed now with some of the issues I would like to raise today with regard to Ebola. As you know, I wanted to meet you today to share with you my observations on Ebola response in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which I visited last week. I visited DRC with Dr. Robert Redfield, the director of CDC, and this was my 7th visit to DRC since becoming DG, and the 4th during the second outbreak, which is in the eastern part of DRC. And I would like actually to start with a story. In Butembo, as you might have heard, there was an attack on the treatment center at 6 a.m. on the day I was planning to visit with Dr. Redfield. And armed men shot at the center at 6 a.m. They killed a policeman. They wounded 3 workers in the center. They left bullet holes in the windows of the center, but they did not dampen the spirits of the health workers who work there. And when I arrived at the center, 5 hours later, it was already reopened. It was such a very humbling experience for me. And I was so humiliated. How come people, after they were attacked and after helping their wounded colleagues, actually continue their work and their service to the people? And I would like to thank our staff for their dedication, and also all the responders of partners and the government health workers for their dedication and commitment. I really learned a lot from that incident. And it gave me confidence that our responders, our staff and staff of partners and the government actually will finish this job, because I have witnessed myself that their dedication is really unparalleled. And you can imagine yourself how difficult it is to work in a situation where somebody is firing at you, the armed groups, and where there is risk to Ebola infection. Actually called the attack by the armed group as Ebola itself, and then there is Ebola itself. So two Ebolas at the same time. And I do not want to minimize the incident. It was deadly, and the third attack on treatment centers in 2 weeks. Three attacks in 2 weeks. But I want to highlight that the brave women and men of the DRC and the partners who are helping them are determined to end this outbreak. And that's why I said I was so humbled by their dedication. And just would like to say a few words on the situation. Latest data from the Ministry of Health, we have 927 confirmed and probable cases, 584 deaths, and we have vaccinated more than 87,000 people, including 27,000 health workers in the DRC and 5,000 in surrounding countries. More than 400 patients treated with novel therapeutics, and we're happy that people are surviving. More than 58,000 contacts registered, and more than 4,200 currently being monitored for signs of illness. And there are half as many new cases per week now than there were in January. In January there were 50 cases per week. Now we have an average of 25 cases per week. So there is a decline of the number of cases per week. Despite the incredibly difficult situation, the outbreak has been contained in 11 out of the 28 communities that have had cases. And we have been able to stop transmission in Beni, Mangina, Komanda, Oicha. Now the Ebola virus is concentrated in Butembo and Katwa. So the cases are now shrinking in a certain geographic area. And not only that, we have prevented Ebola from spreading further in the DRC and across the international borders. But that doesn't mean that there is no risk of spilling over to other provinces and to neighboring countries. But so far, we have contained it in a geographic area in North Kivu, and it's not spreading across DRC and the international borders. The towns of Katwa and Butembo are the current hotspots. More than half of new cases in the past 20 days, at 38 out of 74, have been in Katwa alone. Each time there are cases in other towns, we have been able to see the link back to Katwa and Butembo. This is good because it means we're following the outbreak closely, but bad because, of course, we want to get to zero cases and no more spread, because our action is not just to contain, but to fully control it. Although we can say the containment in a certain geographic area is a success. And I would like to share with you what's working. One, we're encouraged to see the community accepting the response more and more, although at the initial stage there was resistance. Outreach teams, made up mostly by local volunteers, met with 6,000 households over the last week in outbreak affected areas. The people of Katwa and Butembo have been more open to burial teams managing the final rites for their loved ones than any other area. 87% of families with a death have accepted that burial teams perform the burial. And this shows the increasing acceptance by the community, although there is still resistance to some extent. As in other communities, over 90% of people eligible for vaccination have accepted to be vaccinated. And over 90% of these accept follow-up visits. Case finding and investigation are growing stronger. Of 78 cases reported in the last 21 days, 60% were listed as contacts. Most others were linked retrospectively to other cases or health center where they were likely exposed. And I would like to outline also the challenges we face. Security remains our number one concern, both for the communities themselves and the responders. Just this morning, we have received reports of an ongoing incident in Biena health zone following a community death. Escalating violence led to the local transit center being severely damaged, and we have not had reports of health workers or patients injured, but we are awaiting more information. I want to acknowledge the responders from all partners who are doing an incredible job day after day in a very difficult situation. The attacks on Ebola treatment centers are not attacks by the community, but on the community by armed groups, including Maimai and ADF, the Allied Democratic Forces. These attacks could reverse the gains we have made. We're working to find a balance between protecting patients and staff from attacks by armed groups and building community trust and ownership. It's not a simple either-or situation. We must do both to end the outbreak. We want to ensure the security of patients and responders, but we do not support using the use of coercive measures in the community. The security situation means the public is worried about issues beyond health. They want to know where peace will return. They want to know when they will feel safe again. It's understandable that Ebola is an added burden on an already overburdened population. This creates a challenging climate for the response. And during many of my visits there, that's what I witnessed, the despair you see in the community itself. Peace and no peace. Because of this, we approach each community individually and adapt the response to their needs. For example, vaccination teams first make contact with the community accompanied by local communication specialists who work with leaders until they are granted access. The next, based on the challenges, I would like to give you some outline of the next steps, especially based on the new strategic response plan we just launched with the Ministry of Health a couple of weeks ago. We will continue working with communities and their traditional and religious leaders to understand their concerns and build community trust and ownership. Because without community ownership, we will not be able to end the outbreak. We will build local capacity by training local people to take on more of the response, including community-based surveillance. And when we were there with CDC Director Dr. Redfield, one of the areas we have agreed to do together is to focus on training and building local capacity. We will strike a balance between protecting patients and responders and building community trust and ownership. We're strengthening infection prevention and control in health centers. We will stay the course. We have seen the traditional interventions like case finding, contact tracing, and working with communities along with new interventions like vaccination and investigational treatments are having an impact. We have averted a much larger outbreak. We will not leave when the outbreak ends. We will stay and work with communities and with the government to build strong health systems to prevent outbreaks and provide health services for all health needs. This is what the community is asking for. The community is saying, not just for Ebola, we want you to help develop our health system. And they're very actually stressing the fact that we should not be there for Ebola, but to build the health system because they need the quality health services. We will continue working with neighboring countries to strengthen their preparedness. And finally, I have three issues. One, I have an ask. The global community must stay the course with us and end this outbreak. For the next 6 months, the combined cost for all partners will be at least $148 million. Combined, all partners have so far received only $31 million and had pledges of a further $55 million, leaving a gap of $60 million. The funds needed to end this outbreak are small when compared to the potential cost of a larger outbreak. So we ask our partners to fill the gap of the $60 million. And we're following the outbreak 24 hours and 7 days of a week, and we will always be guided by epidemiology and science. And some of you will ask me, I know, why not call an emergency committee to get funds? That's not the purpose of the emergency committee. It's meant to assess if the outbreak constitutes a global threat. We do this assessment almost daily, and I would not hesitate to convene the committee again, as I did in October, if needed. So thank you so much again. I would be happy to listen to your to answer your questions on Ebola. And as I said, let's limit it to Ebola, and we will arrange another meeting to face our leadership or another press conference to face our leadership to answer all the questions you might have. Thank you again.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tedros. And also to remind all journalists who are following us on live webcast via our Twitter account to send their questions through a WhatsApp number that has been provided. We already received some, but we will obviously start here with the room. Let's start with Agnes first, and then Laurent, and then Catherine. And we take one by one question.
Yes, hello, I'm here. So Agnès Pedro from Agence France-Presse. I would like to comment some ideas that the UN chief, Antonio Guterres, has recently proposed. He wants to cut the MONUSCO forces and suggesting that there could be a reduction of 2,000 people. So I would like you to say what do you think would be the impact on the response to Ebola in DRC, especially on the security for the people and for the humanitarian workers who all need this security. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're in regular contact with Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and I assure you that there will not be any impact on the support they're giving us based on the action they will be taking on the peacekeeping operation. They have actually, he is actually ready to do all his best to maximize protection in the Ebola affected areas. Thank you.
Logan?
Laurent Ciro, Swiss News Agency. Last week, the president of Doctors Without Borders, Joanne Liu, made a few remarks, and among them, she said that in the communities, there are a lot of people that don't understand why they can't access to the vaccine and why the vaccine is just for now for the people that have been affected or the contacts or the contacts or contacts. You think there is still a lack of education in that regard? What kind of steps could you do more or better in that regard?
Can you repeat the question? Sorry.
So she says that there is a lack of education in the communities towards the need to focus only on a bunch of people. I mean, people affected, contact, and contact of contacts for the vaccination, and that a lot of people don't understand that. How the things could be made better in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's the strategy we follow now, what we call the ring vaccination. And we vaccinate contacts and contacts of contacts. And I can understand that there will be a need to increase awareness of the communities, why we're doing that. And in other areas, by the way, the community started to understand after our explanation to communities, especially through engagements. And I hope we can address this problem too in the Butembo and Katwa area. But I have a colleague who is expert on Ebola here, Ian Clark. If you would like to say a few words, would be happy.
No, I think maybe just to add, yes, I mean, it's really important that we find, you know, each of these communities, that they're different. So the communities in Beni, the communities in Oicha and Katwa and Butembo. And of course, we need to constantly tailor the messaging. So this is something we're working closely with the partners. And of course, it's important to take scientific information and then translate that into messaging that the local communities really do understand. So we're working with our partners, with UNICEF, with social anthropologists to really look at how we get that messaging across to the local communities and also closely with MSF as well.
And thank you very much, Dr. Clark, Catherine, then Jeremy, then Tom, and then Christian.
Oui, Catherine Fiancambo-Conga for France 24. I would like to know if the attacks to the different treatment centers has affected your ring vaccinations. Are you running out of vaccines? That's my first question. And my second one is how do you collaborate with Uganda? Which is the closest country of the two places that you've mentioned, Butembo and Katwa.
Yeah, thank you. With regard to the amount of vaccines we have, with the current epidemiologic situation and the strategy we follow, the ring vaccination, we have enough stock of vaccines. And not only that, we are in regular contact with the manufacturer of the vaccine, Merck. I'm personally in contact, and they're doing everything to boost when needed. Then on Uganda, I have been to Uganda a couple of times now, because as I said in my statement, we're doing two things. One is controlling Ebola in DRC, but at the same time preventing the spread of it to neighboring countries. And for that to happen, we have to strengthen the preparedness of the neighboring countries. And during my two visits to Uganda, I was actually impressed by the level of preparation. And because of the fear of spread from DRC to Uganda, their preparedness level has increased significantly in the last few months. And that's why now with the new transformation in WHO, we will give more emphasis to preparedness and to invest in countries well in advance and prepare them in advance in order to prevent not only Ebola but other outbreaks or epidemics. So we're in, not only with Uganda, but we're in touch with all neighboring countries and we're trying to help them in any way possible to boost their preparedness. And not only Uganda, the other neighbors also have shown significant improvement in their preparedness level. So anything you'd like to add, maybe Ian, would be happy.
Sure. Maybe just on the, you mentioned in relation to the attacks on the Ebola transit center. So, you know, for the vaccine, this requires an ultra cold chain supply system, and this was not impacted at all during the recent attacks on the ETCs. So there's no disruption in terms of the ultra cold chain. And maybe to add on Uganda, you know, also the vaccination campaign has been very successful in terms of vaccinating healthcare workers and frontline staff there. And I think it's more than 4,000 in Uganda, also in South Sudan, in Rwanda, and we're just in Burundi, and we're just starting now in Rwanda as well.
Workers in Uganda.
Yes.
Okay.
We go now to Jeremy, then Tom, then Christian, and then we will go for maybe one or two questions from journalists who are watching us. Jeremy, please.
Hi, thank you. Jeremy Lange for Radio France and RFI. Two questions for you. The first one will be, we hear a very different speech from the NGOs. I'm thinking of MSF, that are, if I understand correctly, is saying that basically we are failing to respond correctly to the crisis. They closed their center in Butembo, I think. You mentioned that there was an ongoing incident today. So considering the level of mistrust, do you really think it's possible to contain the disease today, especially that you said that you have a downfall in the number of cases reported, but if I understand correctly, a lot of cases are actually taking place in the communities, and we don't hear about those cases. So is it... I'm thinking about the numbers. Do you think that you get the numbers right? That would be the first question. And the second question would be, the NGOs still are asking for change in the strategy, maybe to rely more on the local health center and on the communities, so to involve them more. So I would like to have your opinion on that. Do you think that we need to change the strategy right now? Thank you.
Thank you. I will start from the first one, failing to failing to control, you said. That's not true, because as I have said earlier, one good news is that the disease for the last 7 months has been contained in a geographic area called North Kivu. It hasn't spread to other parts of the country, and it hasn't spread to neighboring countries. I think anybody can agree that this is fact and something that we can say is good news. And the second is, not only that it's not spreading, it's actually contracting. And I said it earlier, I have been to Beni myself. I have been to Mangina. I have been to Oicha. I have been to Komanda. All these four places are cleared now of the outbreak. There are some sporadic in Mangina, but it's just a few cases and then that's it. But these four areas, we can say, are cleared. Now the focus is on Butembo and Katwa. So you cannot say it's failing when the outbreak is contracting. It's contracting. And I'm repeating again, Beni, Mangina, Oicha, Komanda. These places I have visited myself are okay now. Now the challenge is Katwa and Butembo. Then on Katwa and Butembo, we have been to Butembo just last week, and I have been there myself with the CDC director and others. It's a challenge which we have seen before, a challenge we have seen in Beni. You would expect community resistance in Butembo. It's not surprising. I'm not surprised, and nobody is surprised. And the reason is that part of DRC is an area where there has been armed conflict for many decades, and you know that. And there is a lot of displacement. And because of the conflict, the communities living there are always cautious. And if there is mistrust, I wouldn't be surprised. And not only that, there are armed groups that are operating in that region. They don't have any language except firing, shooting at you, like the ADF. They don't even talk. They don't understand the language of political settlement or negotiation. The only language they know, as far as I know, I was foreign minister, I know them, and now as DG of WHO, the only language they know is just shooting. And that really complicates the situation. And these groups, these armed groups, not only they attack our responders, but they also attack the community itself. The community itself. Then imagine a progress that you can make in the middle of that and containing it in a certain geographic area. And not only that, there is a downward trend and contraction of the outbreak. I think it cannot be by any account called failed. At least it cannot be called failed. So the situation itself can show you. I have been there, so I'm just giving you a personal account of how the disease is contracting. But when I say that, I don't want also to undermine the risk, because it may again revamp if the situation, the security situation, continues to deteriorate. It may. And the chances are there. It may spread to other parts of DRC. It may spread even to neighboring countries. So there is a need to strike a balance between what we do in terms of security protection, but at the same time staying with the community to fight it. To be honest, leaving the area is not an option. Evacuation is not an option, because we will be losers. We will lose what we have gained so far. And not only that, the virus could get a free ride to spread aggressively. And that's why I said I was really humbled by my colleagues. They want to stay. They're only asking for protection. Protection from who? Protection from aggressive armed groups like ADF. Not from the community, but engaging the community and empowering the community. That balance is important. We shouldn't leave. We shouldn't really abandon the community. We can't. That's not an option. So that's why we need to have a very delicate balance of having protection from these negative forces like ADF and Maimai, and at the same time engaging the community, creating ownership, listening to their concerns, addressing it, ensuring community ownership, and finish the outbreak. I have been there hours after the attack. There was a risk of being killed too, because the area was not fully cleared from those who were firing at the center. But on the other side, there are people who are exposed to these armed groups and to Ebola, and I shouldn't abandon them. And I was so happy. People from CDC and USAID also joined and were in that same difficult situation to help the people who need our service. So by any account, there is progress, but of course a delicate one, and we have to continue to push and push until we finish the job. But one thing I would like to stress on that. You know, when the community said, why are you so aggressive in terms of Ebola? They're right. We have malaria. We have cholera. We have other health problems. And You know, you shouldn't just say Ebola, Ebola, help us with the other things. That's why I said in my opening statement, not just to fight Ebola, we will stay there to address the concerns and demands of the community, the other demands. Because there are other serious problems, not just Ebola. And I would actually like to call upon the international community to link the outbreak control now, Ebola, and with developing the health system. That's a big challenge. Otherwise, we will appear as if we're preventing Ebola from getting into other countries and we don't care about the demands of the community, the additional demands. And the most important thing here is we care, not just Ebola, we care to address the other challenges the communities face. And that's the challenge, not only for WHO, for all the international community, while fighting Ebola, to start development, to start rehabilitating the health systems of DRC, to start showing to the communities of those affected by Ebola that we're with you to address the other problems too. We're not here to only prevent Ebola because it goes to other neighboring countries. We shouldn't really stay there if that's our goal. Our goal should be to help them with not only Ebola, but helping with the development of the health system. Sorry, I'm taking a lot of your time here, but it's because that's what I believe. That's what they're asking, that's what we should do. And the international community should also be prepared to help for the long haul of really developing the health system as per the request from the community. And we should be on their side. That's what we are focused now. And then on the strategic response plan, it addresses the second issue you said. The focus should be community engagement. The focus should be local capacity building. And that's actually the shift we have already made, and I fully agree if that's what our partners like MSF said. I really fully agree, and that's what we have already included in our new strategic response plan. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tedros. So we'll go now to Tom, Christian, and then if we have time, I would really like to ask one or two questions from journalists who are watching us. Tom, please.
Thanks. I have a couple of questions, Dr. Tedros, about the sort of outlook. The easy first question is, when will you be able to tell us something about the success of the therapeutics that you're trying? And also about the future, is it possible that this outbreak, this disease, could linger in the area for years? Are you preparing for that? And a related question about vaccines. Obviously, at the moment, you're using the Merck vaccine. There's this ring vaccination program going on. But there's a possibility, I guess, in future that there could be a change in, you know, the available options. Like, you know, it could be licensed for a general vaccination campaign, or another vaccine could come online. Is there a point at which you can foresee the response changing because you have a new vaccine option available? Thanks.
Yeah, I would actually look for that day when we have a vaccine that can be used in at large scale and easier to manage in terms of the cold chain requirements that we have now. And we're encouraging actually institutions to really give us more options. And we would be happy to work with those who have additional options to offer. So in the future, it would be just one of the vaccines in routine, you know, that can be used in health facilities rather than using it in a small scale like the ring vaccination only. Then on the therapeutic success, I think there is already a success. People are surviving. And I was very heartened and humbled to meet in the first area where the first outbreak actually started in Western DRC, in Bikoro, Bandaka, and Itipo. I met associations of survivors, and I was so humbled. And they, just one thing I remember from what they said, as you know, Ebola is a killer, and survival rate is very low. And they told me, you know, we have got a second chance in life. And we have to be prepared really to contribute to our communities, to teach them on Ebola, but also support to our neighborhood and communities on other issues. And one of them was saying to me, I don't want to meddle my second chance in life. Because having Ebola is like a life, a death sentence. So the success is already there, Tom. It's already there. But we will compile and bring it to you so that it can be presented also scientifically. But otherwise, from what we witness, it's already there. Then on the Ebola outbreak, our target is now to finish it in the next 6 months. But at the same time, it's always good to plan beyond the horizon, to prepare for any eventualities. So that's what we're doing. And during our trip with Dr. Redfield, that's what we have agreed. Let's do our best to finish it in the 6 months, while at the same time preparing for any eventualities. So that's what we will do. And we want to have all partners actually hands on the deck, and we will do as much as we can based on the new strategic plan we just launched a few weeks ago under the leadership of the government to finish it in the next 6 months.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Christian?
Christiana with the German Press Agency. Are you not walking a very fine line here if you get demands from the community for support to build up the health service? There are also demands for roads and other development issues. What about the next community that is fortunate enough not to have an Ebola outbreak but has the same needs? How are you directing the funds? Can you use the Ebola funds to help these people in their basic needs, building up their community service? Are you getting a new drive for money for healthcare for all in a much bigger region? And a second very short one, did you ever have anyone who was vaccinated and contracted the virus?
Okay. So Ian will tell you more, but we have vaccinated people who have contracted the virus. On Ebola funds and building the health system, you know, it's not just to the Ebola area. I have met the new president twice so far now. The first meeting was in February on the margins of the African Union. And second is when I visited DRC last week. And during both occasions, he assured me that he will do everything to strengthen the health system, and it's his priority. And in his inaugural speech, he had actually expressed his strong commitment to invest in strengthening the health system. So I think that's very important. And more than the partners, I would actually take, you know, the government's commitment seriously. Because at the end of the day, support from the partners will be a complement or a supplement to the commitment that the country already has. So that's, I think, the basis for my confidence, if you like. And then when we visited DRC recently, we have discussed with partners, many partners and donors. and we have discussed about the link between fighting Ebola and strengthening the health system, between emergency and development. And there was consensus to move into that, not just for Ebola areas only, but for DRC at large. And that's, I think, what we should do. So, of course, we're getting the request from the Ebola-affected areas, but when I say we have to go into developing the health system, it's for the country at large, and that's why I call upon partners to really focus on systems development for DRC at large, not just the Ebola-affected areas. But we have to commit specifically to the Ebola-affected areas also. But then one more thing I would like to raise with Ebola-affected areas is, in many of the areas, the government had already started free services, and we're using Ebola funding also to help with that. And that may not be, that's also a good support to the request or the ask from the communities. Please.
So just to pick up on the question on the vaccination. So of course, because it's the tactic, the strategy of the ring vaccination is really targeted at contacts and contacts of contacts. So a lot of people who get vaccinated have been in contact with Ebola cases and go on to develop Ebola systems. And in fact, that's what we would like to see. We would like to see that all cases come from known contact lists that we have been able to vaccinate. Of course, they were exposed and then subsequently have been vaccinated. So you will see that. Now, what we would like to see, and again, it's still too early and it's part of a clinical trial, is whether that has any impact in terms of how the virus manifests itself after you've been vaccinated. So in that case, it's people who have been a contact, have then been vaccinated, and then have gone on to have symptoms of the disease.
But you still are convinced that it's effective, the vaccine?
So it's part of a clinical trial that's being looked at. It's you know that information will be released. But we certainly, when you look at the history of Ebola epidemics, when you have so many cases in terms of community deaths and yet not an exponential rise. So clearly the there is an impact of the ring vaccination. It is clearly having a positive impact in terms of preventing further spread within those communities.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dr. Clark. Thank you very much, Dr. Tedros. I apologize to everyone in the room. I know there are more questions here in the room. There are also a number of questions from your colleagues who are watching online. Anne Gallant from Telegraph, Helen Bransfeld from STAT, Jenny from DevEx, Miriam Schumann from Lancet. I will try to answer all of your questions in writing if it has not been answered today. I thank you again to everyone and have a nice day.
So shall we do the new one in 1 month from now? Facing the... Are you ready for that?
Yeah.
Okay. So in 1 month, you will meet the new leadership. And please prepare for any questions you will have. You will get the answers from my colleagues. Thank you so much.